So I just want to welcome everyone to this call. The story that we're going to be doing today is Ellen's story. It is the summary of 9 years of psychoanalysis with Dr. Fran Anderson, one of Dr. Sarno's most trusted psychoanalysts. And the wonderful thing about psychoanalysis is that because it's so intense, you have a chance to really get to know and explore someone's psyche in depth. When we were talking about this, session beforehand, kind of spreading the word, we talked about how we were talking about one of the themes that we'll be discussing today is dreams. And someone said, so how do I interpret my dreams? And my feeling on that is that it really needs to be done within the context of a deeper analysis, a deeper exploration of what's going on underneath the surface. And one of the wonderful things I think about the Ellen story is that the two participants in that story, Dr. Anderson and Ellen herself, had a chance to really build a deep partnership and a deep understanding of each other. So I think that's a very special thing about the story. And I know that both of them were profoundly affected by their participation in that analysis.
Yes, and it was a two-way street, as you're pointing out. Dr. Anderson was affected emotionally in parallel with Ellen's story rather deeply. And then Ellen was affected somatically with life-threatening illnesses as she went through the uncovering process, discovering these repressed emotions. So it was very Freudian, a classic Freudian, wasn't it?
Absolutely,
because the therapist was also undergoing analysis herself at the same time she was uncovering Ellen's repressed emotions. This one is thick. This one is deep.
It is very deep, isn't it? It's actually the second time that Dr. Anderson has published it. She also published it in a critically acclaimed book called Relational Perspectives on the Brain. Sorry, on the body. Speaking of brains, mine is a little bit fuzzy as I've got a cold right now. So I will goof up and be a bit more absent-minded than normal recently.
Yeah, the title is Relational Perspectives on the Body, Psychoanalytic Theory and Practice, edited by Lewis Aaron and Francis Sommer Anderson, Analytic Press, 1998. And
there
this is reprinted here by permission of the publishers.
So a powerful story, and one of the wonderful things, as Bruce was just saying, is how Dr. Anderson makes herself very vulnerable and shares her own personal experience. Dr. Anderson also edited a second volume. This is the third book that she helped create. In the other book, Bodies and Treatment, she actually tells her own TMS story, which I think it's just a wonderful thing when people are willing to share themselves like that, and when the psychoanalyst is willing to kind of join you and bring themselves down to your own level and share their own experience. Thank you, Enjoy. She just in the chat room gave me some sympathy for my cold. So maybe I can start summarizing the story, Bruce, and then you can take over. Does that sound like a good plan?
Okay.
All right.
If I can remember it all, there's so much.
I know, there is a lot. It is a big story. And one thing that we can do here is we could break this into two separate sessions so that we could talk about the first half this session and then continue it next time and go into a little bit more depth. I hope that some of the other people who are reading, in particular Nina, I know you've been reading and thinking about this story a lot. I hope you'll chime in and share your perspective. We are all peers here, And I think that's one of the wonderful things about this discussion group, which actually brings something up. I need to mention this, is this is a book discussion group. So everybody's perspective is very, very welcome. It's important to emphasize that because none of us here are licensed medical or mental health practitioners. So we can't give medical or mental health advice. We're just kind of sharing our own experience and our own interpretations. So if you feel like that's something that you're interested in, then we're glad to have you along. So to begin, Ellen is actually a referral from Dr. Sarno. She experienced back pain after a divorce. So she was married to her husband, Ted, got married, I think, when she was 22, and never had a chance to really explore her her career. Both her family and Ted kind of pressured her into the kind of the wife and mother role, despite the fact that she had pretty copious talents and some ambition. But after the divorce, she went into she got these symptoms, went and saw Dr. Sarno, who referred her to Dr. Anderson. I thought one of my favorite paragraphs in this was, especially for the themes that we'll be talking about today, Dr. Anderson writes, "The therapy process started for me as I listened to Ellen's voice on her answering machine when I returned her initial call. Her way of speaking had an immediate impact. Her voice was flat, her pace was slow, deliberate, and measured. As we spoke in the initial interview, I noticed that she paused frequently and swallowed audibly. After a few sessions, I noticed that her speech pattern was heightening my awareness for her lack of emotional response to what I was often experiencing as highly emotionally charged material. I often felt tense at these times, recognizing stirrings of anger or outrage or disappointment that I, the therapist, could not express as Ellen described various interpersonal situations that had turned out badly for her." So this created a bit of a template for the interactions between Dr. Anderson and Ellen, where Ellen was not at that point able to fully feel all of her emotions. And she sees, Dr. Anderson talks about how this is a common thing that she's seen many times in her treatment of TMS patients, that our emotions are too overwhelming, and because of that, we stuff them, or we create somatic symptoms to distract ourselves from them.
I think Alan Borden, in one of the webinars, maybe the first one, was very quick to pick up on the flat affect in one of the caller's voices. He identified that right away.
Yeah.
And I think Dr. Anderson summarizes this in a, briefly, she notes an extreme disconnections of cognitive awareness from emotional experience. That's the way she summarizes
perfect
that whole thing in one sentence. This flat affect that she noticed right away. It's obvious from the start that Ellen is stuffing, right?
And I think that's a great phrase, this disconnect between cognitive awareness and, you said, emotional expression. Was that it?
Emotional experience.
Emotional experience. So not feeling her emotions. So
in her body, right? And then it's getting transferred over to the realm of dreams, the royal road to the unconscious.
There we go.
Wow, and that's awesome.
Yeah, certainly. And that was actually the key which we used to, as we were talking about this discussion, as we talked about the importance of dreams. So she had just gotten divorced. The divorce was very traumatic, but she was living down the street from her husband, who had belittled her, it sounds like, during the marriage, and he had asked for the separation. And he had moved on, and she was dating someone, I think maybe for 9 years, who was already married, so that doesn't sound very satisfying. And he had moved on, he had two new kids, and she had still been involved with him, even to the point of landscaping his house. But when she talked about him, there was no emotions that she was experiencing. But speaking of this royal road to the unconscious that Bruce was just describing, she reported these dreams. And in one of the dreams, she was, how did it go? She and her husband, her ex-husband Ted, were riding their bikes in the countryside, and there was a boxer dog. And the boxer dog was keeping up, and it, the dream had this euphoric feeling to it, but then suddenly the dog couldn't keep up, and it fell behind and then fell over and rolled over, and you could see that its chest cavity was opened up and decayed, which is just this striking and powerful image. But as she told this story, it was like she had no emotional effect on her.
She said that she described it as a nightmare, but Dr. Anderson kept waiting for the punchline where the nightmare quality of it would be defined. But she described it in such a distant voice. If I could quote that description of the
Please.
Dream that she had, I think it's on location 1752 in the Kindle. I was out in the countryside. Alan was out in the countryside somewhere riding bikes with Ted. It started out pleasant. We had a boxer dog with us. My family got one, a male, when I was 6 months old, and we had it till I was seven. The second boxer was when I was in fourth grade, and we had it till I was a junior in high school, a female. Both became overprotective, and we had to get rid of them. Otherwise, sent them to the pound, I guess. Ted and I were in Minnesota for 3 years, and then we came to Princeton, and after 1 year, we bought a house. The neighbors had two boxers. The fawn one lived with us in the evenings. Shortly before we broke up, one morning we found him dead on our porch, rat poison. The dog in the dream was nice looking, running along with us. The first part was euphoric. Somewhere in the middle, the dog was not keeping up. I knew it was sick. It kneeled over dead, rolled over on its back. Its chest cavity was open and deteriorated.
So,
and as I listened, the tension mounted for Dr. Anderson, but then the punchline never came. This flat affect again that she mentioned, the disconnect.
And so Dr. Anderson, after hearing this story, she was like, okay, what's going on? What is the symbolism of this? She had a deep intuition that it had something to do with her marriage, because obviously this was situated in the context of the marriage, but nothing was negative. She hadn't heard anything negative about the marriage thus far, and so she was wondering where that came from, but she didn't want to push, and so she knew that the patient has to take it at their own pace, at the rate at which they are ready for this. And so she realized that her job was to help Ellen see the emotional impact that these stories were having on her. So she shared how it felt to her to hear these stories, and she was having a stronger reaction than Ellen was having, and that was kind of a signal that Ellen could use to regain a connection to her emotions. One term that may be helpful to mention here is alexithymia. It comes from either a Greek or a Latin root, I forget which. Bruce, our classicist, may be able to help.
Greek, I would think.
A means no, lex means words, and thymia means feelings. So alexithymia literally means no words for feelings. This is a little bit of what we're seeing in Ellen, is that she had no access to her feelings, and so those feelings were expressed instead of in words via pain. But there's still a mystery at this point. We don't know what's going on. We just know that throughout the progress of the therapy, Dr. Anderson is helping Ellen to recognize and feel those feelings by almost channeling the feelings for her. So just curious, does anyone have any reactions about this? Any thoughts about this? The feelings?
What's fascinating to me about that story is that, you know, how mixed up the real boxers are with the dream boxers. And, you know, obviously really, really important thing for her to follow up on, right? Which is, it's great that she's in therapy and able to do that. But what gets me is shortly before we broke up one morning, we found him, and this is the neighbor's fawn boxer. So it's a real boxer, dead on our porch, rat poison.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's fascinating. I mean, I know that's in the real world. It's not in the dream, but I mean, that must have been incredibly traumatic.
Yeah, it's like her dream life and the real world interpenetrate and become one and the same for her.
Yeah.
There's no barrier between fantasy and reality.
Yeah. She
isn't able to feel her emotions, so she can't separate things. Like she can't compartmentalize. It all comes at her at once, and that's why. And she's overwhelmed, and she retreats. That's how it sounds to me, anyway.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it highlights how our dream languages are probably very, very personal. Like the reason that boxers were, and animals perhaps in general, were an important part of her dreams and of her the symbolism in her dreams is that they were an important part of her childhood. These dogs loved her. They took care of her. They had to put them down because they got too protective. And I'm a dog lover myself, and I know dogs were an important part of my childhood. And, you know, you really form strong attachments to them, and I'm sure that's why they showed up in the dream.
And that's a lot of the reason why she was shut down, because that wouldn't be much different from a parent dying, a grandparent dying, a best friend dying. I mean, it's the same experience to a kid.
Yeah.
Her dogs being put down. And being put down, I mean, they didn't even die of anything natural, you know? It was because they were too protective.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And you notice during the first part of the dream that it's euphoric. That could correlate with the first part of her marriage, the honeymoon phase.
Mm-hmm.
I thought.
That is an excellent point. Yeah.
Or because her first experiences with her dogs were, you know, I mean, that they may have been a very, very powerful experience in her childhood. It might have been euphoric, and then they're killed, basically, or, you know, sent to a farm.
Yeah.
The two questions I have about Ellen's relationship with Ted that I don't think are explained fully in the story why in the heck did she marry Ted in the first place?
Right.
And then two, why did Ted hit her?
Yeah.
Why was she sitting there with this smoldering mass of resentment who hit her in the chest? What brought this to a crisis?
I think that there are so many mysteries of human nature. I don't know. I mean, I think that's... That's one of the things which I'm sure therapists see all the time is people who make bad decisions, and I'm sure that over the 9 years of psychoanalysis that was explored in depth. And actually, that's one of the things that that Dr. Anderson talks about in the story is that one of the things that frustrated her and that was challenging for her to listen to is how Ellen didn't necessarily make good decisions about who to be with. Dr. Anders, or because they wrote the chapter together, they talk about how at work she had difficulty identifying people whose agendas might harm her own interests in personal relationships. There were other bad decisions that, you know, decisions that are easy for us to say are bad, but if you're in the situation, I'm sure it's much more blurred. But, you know, a 9-year relationship with a married man is something that, you know, you may want to question and understand how it's happening. So certainly a pattern of these questionable, of decisions that she might not make now later on in her life, since she's had that analysis and that experience of understanding.
You know, another thing that occurs to me is that, you know, here's this kid. She's got these two boxers. One had to be eliminated for being overprotective when she was very young, and then the same thing happened again. I mean, a kid would take that very personally. Mm-hmm. You know, she would abandon protection, perhaps. She wasn't protecting herself. She was picking wrong people and not allowing her emotions to surface and her intuition to surface and say, maybe this person isn't that good for you, maybe you should be careful, right? But mm-hmm. her protectors had been destroyed. I mean, that would have really affected me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
She seems like a person who's not learning from her experience for a long, long time.
Maybe she's not even having her experience because, you know, she's not emotionally processing it, and she's not having, she's just got this flat affect. So it sounds like from the answering machine thing that it's like she's a robot. And I hate to say it, you know, like I think it's important to try and connect this to our own experiences, because we all are TMSers, and to recognize that this stuff applies to it ourselves. It's so easy to see it when it's with someone else, but I know that personally, mm-hmm. I still struggle with some of these same issues and feeling my emotions as well. In terms of, you know, when I was 9, my mother died. And when I talk about that, as I'm talking about it right now, you guys may be having stronger feelings about it than I am, and I'm still struggling to connect with those emotions. That's something that I know I want to work on, is learning how to feel those emotions. So it's can anyone else relate to that? Does anyone else feel?
I thought I had all that down about the emotions when I worked with this with my mind, and I went back and I said it last week how I went back and got that beautiful experience, but I thought it was already completely over, and there was still something lingering. It wasn't the picture wasn't hurting me anymore, but there was something lingering there, and I didn't know what it was. And I had a dream, and in my dream, Mama was looking at me, and she was mad, and I didn't understand why she was mad. And upon awakening, I understood that I hadn't, you know, got that to rest in my own mind totally, 100%. I would got it like 90%, but I hadn't got it all the way. And my subconscious was telling me in my dream, or the dream was telling me that I had some more work to do there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was, you know, sometimes when you think you got it all done up emotionally in the consciousness, your dreams can come and let you know what you might have left behind.
Mm-hmm. Or your body.
Yes, in your body, yes.
I just noticed that Ted's stated reasons for wanting a divorce was that Ellen was too controlling of in her need for neatness and cleanliness in the household. It sounds like she was constantly machining out, doing things in a mechanical way, because she wasn't in touch with her emotions. That's that perfectionism you see in TMSers.
I was just going to say it's perfectionist,
She's being perfect in order to avoid emotions, because that's the way she feels safe, I guess.
Yes.
Another thing about that I noticed was that here she put this guy through grad school, right? At the same time, she's trying to do her own master's, and he's being very discouraging, right? And she's doing all the housework, obviously, because she's some kind of clean freak, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the only control that she probably felt she had was a little bit of complaining about cleaning. In fact, maybe a lot of complaining about cleaning. But Ted couldn't even handle that. You know, so it was, I think it was a pretty dysfunctional marriage from the sound of it to me.
Hmm.
A lot of repression. A lot of suppressions. And
well, I mean, and also when you think about the temerity of the guy, you know, you think, you know, I'm sure she was expecting a little bit of gratitude, not to be told, well, I'm, you know, get out because you're keeping the house too clean.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I wouldn't have landscaped his yard, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, so don't ever do too good of a job.
Well, you know, and we all have our own baggage, which expresses it in itself in different ways. But yeah, Bruce said something which I thought was very interesting. He said he talked about how Ted had hit her in the chest during the marriage, and I thought that was maybe worth worth drawing in a little bit later, because did anyone else see a connection between that and the boxer dogs? That was where the physical trauma.
Oh. Yeah, obviously.
Oh, yeah, that was real obvious, I thought.
Yeah, okay.
Yes,
a direct link, symbolic link between the physical and the dream image. The physical world is entering into the dream image directly.
And possibly she was trying to protect herself again. You know, she was doing, some protector part of her had arisen and was trying to defend herself against Ted, perhaps. That may have been what provoked him, because he looked like, you know, he seems to me like he just wanted to run things.
Could it be that, you know, the dog that she had to put down in the past, it hurt her and in her heart and everything, and then when she had to deal with this with Ted, she had that dream, and that was sort of like her, you know, anger towards him, looking at that dog. Wow, this could go in a lot of different ways, you know.
I know, yeah. I can. Is the dog's overprotectiveness?
I know.
Does that something to do with Ted, though?
Yeah, well,
with Ted being extremely overprotective of her,
well, it could be
jealous, and she's caught in this trap being perfect all the time as he gets more and more possessive and controlling until he lashes out at her.
Well, one parallel which I thought was really interesting, and this one may be another obvious one, but this was the parallel between the way that she related to the animals and the way that she related to Dr. Anderson in therapy. So in the dreams, it felt to me as I was reading it that being hit by her husband, someone who she had invested so much in, she had kind of given up her own career so that she could support him and so that she could be this perfect wife figure, turned around and hit her. And I think that was just in the chest, and that was just incredibly traumatic for her, and she just couldn't process it. She didn't know what to do with it. She couldn't even bring it up in therapy. It was like it didn't exist except for through her dreams. And so she couldn't tolerate those emotions, so she stuffed them. And then she had, in the dreams, the animals would bear the traumatic experience for her. So rather than her having an injured chest, the boxer dog had an injured chest. It was all decayed. And instead of her reacting and suffering from that trauma, Dr. Anderson had to react to and suffer from that trauma. I just kind of get a feeling of overwhelming feelings, and what she had to do is, and then there were later dreams. There was a dream about the rabbit, and when she related the dream about the rabbit, if I remember correctly, then she was able to experience it some more. Rather than having this completely flat affect, she could talk about how it made her feel, and she could talk about She could also talk about her back pain. I think maybe she had some symptoms as she was relating the story of the rabbit, because there was another, I think one rabbit was inside of the other rabbit, a similar imagery to the boxer dog story. But this violence, this violent imagery and painful imagery that she didn't know how to express, and it came out in dreams, and then it was Dr. Anderson's job to feel it for her until she was able to feel it herself.
Yeah, Ellen told Dr. Anderson that when she related the rabbit dream, my back started to hurt as she told her about the dream she had of skiing in Switzerland with Ted. I learned to ski with Ted the first year we were married. It's almost like, again, this the fantasy of the dream and the reality of the experience are merged in the dreamscape. We were skiing, trying to get on a lift to go on to a scenic run. We missed it, got on another one. We were skiing through mountains. We paused. I looked over and I could see a tiny white rabbit, a rabbit sitting inside the carcass of a twin bunny. It was dead. The first rabbit was eating the carcass of the rabbit it was sitting in. It pushed the dead rabbit off the cliff. A bloody scene. The live rabbit was sitting on the edge of the cliff, wiggling its nose. A harmless, cute rabbit that had done this deed. Ted and I were watching. Three or four ugly men came up and confronted us. It's giving me a chill to tell you. The dream shifted. I was with my family, mother, father, brother, my family of origin. We were watching a home movie documentary about the white rabbit eating the carcass. When it ended, I was sitting on the floor. I had a leather-embossed storybook with the words, "My Story," on the cover. I had a Windex bottle in the shape of a little girl. I was spraying it clean, only the cover. There my back doesn't hurt so much, having expressed this. That's just so pregnant with meaning. She's going back to her childhood in it, too, to this prelapsarian innocence, carrying back this disturbing image and also trying to clean herself. There's the cleaning. It's like all of those things.
Good goodness.
Yeah, I didn't see that till now. That's where she was. That's where she got the neat freak business, trying to clean herself up. Yeah, that's what I mean about this story. You could go
it goes
on.
Deep.
You could write a tri-decker on this thing.
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds interesting. So, I mean, as she's talking about this, she talks. Dr. Anderson talks about in the story, she aims to illustrate how feelings that could not be acknowledged and tolerated contributed to Ellen's physical symptoms. And then two, how my awareness of my feelings in the therapy process, often at a somatic level, constituted a key element in the process of relieving the physical symptoms. How she, Dr. Anderson, had to feel for Ellen what Ellen wasn't ready to feel. And then three, by underscoring the challenge that patient and therapist face when their attempts to resolve physical symptoms result in serious, sometimes life-threatening illness. I think that we've talked a lot about being able to tolerate illness, the feelings, and we've begun to talk about Dr. Anderson's role in feeling emotions for her. Shall we move on to maybe talking about the physical symptoms that came up during the illness? I mean, I think that Dr. Anderson has talked previously about how there's this old psychoanalytic wisdom that when you're dealing with physical symptoms, you have to be very, very careful. You have to you can't unearth things too much too quickly, because those physical symptoms may be fulfilling an important role. And I feel like in the TMS community, when you see people reading the book online and responding to that, sometimes you see that after they read the book, one symptom goes away, and then all of a sudden they have a flurry of symptom imperative symptoms, where other symptoms pop up to replace the symptom which has gone away. Has anyone else noticed that phenomena? Has anyone else experienced it?
Yes, it seems like.
Yes, this tick bite I got last month.
There you go.
On the left side, right on the same side that I broke in my heel, that I had my herniated disc, that I had my relapse, well, it should have been just a simple tick bite, right? You itch for a couple of days. But
right.
What did it do? It triggered my allergies. So they got worse and worse. And I hadn't had allergies in years until I had to go into urgent care and do the inhalers and take prednisone. And I can't. And even now, I got a rash on my left side, the same side that I had the tick bite, which is clearly something to do with the wound, the idea of the wound. And when I got bit, the anniversary of my father's death, March 9th.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that stuff ties together. Obviously, there was a real allergic reaction. Obviously, there was a real tick bite. But obviously, too, it all tied in with the TMS chronic pain response, and also with deeper psychological material that was occurring in parallel with it. It was quite a revelation, actually, that tick bite. It taught me a lot about TMS and how it operates. And
yeah.
But getting a handle on it that way also lets you clean it up. Once you get that symbolic knowledge going in conjunction with the somatization and your own personal biography and the history of your pain, it starts to go away.
So
then, that's what I think Sarno means by knowledge being the cure.
Interesting. Could you elaborate on that a little bit more about like his specific words?
Oh, that knowledge is the inoculation that is the cure for the TMS process. Because once you've intellectualized it, I guess if you want to go into neuroscience in the prefrontal cortex, then it's no longer in the limbic system.
Let's not get too intellectual, because we don't want to lose people here with fancy vocab. But I think that is what you're saying is that the important knowledge here is knowing to think psychologically, so that when you get a symptom, you know to say, okay, what's the psychological underpinning of it?
And it takes you a long time to get enough clues assembled from meditation, from mindfulness, from studying the psychology to actually get an intellectual handle on it. You might say you understand how TMS works, but understanding how it works is a visceral thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's both body and mind at the
right.
same time. You know, the symbolic tick bite and the real tick bite, or the cavity in the boxer's chest and the place where Ted hit Ellen, where that interconnection is between the two, where the interstices is.
So
and
we need.
She says to Dr. Anderson, is that right after that incident of relating those two things, her husband hitting her in the chest and the dog having the chest cavity, she says she revealed that she was, in her words, living in danger the whole time to keep him flying off the
yes.
stretching a rubber band as far as possible. Just to sleep with somebody with that kind of violence is unreal, she said. When I asked her how she was able to do it, she replied, I kept myself in a bloody straitjacket. And like, if that isn't a recipe for TMS, you know, that tension, hey? And the thing is that it would be exacerbated. I mean, Ted himself might not have been as dangerous as she thought, but she's relating it back to the fact that the boxers went to live on a farm when they got protective. right? Like, she couldn't protect herself from this guy.
Interesting. So self-defense is maybe to use the way that Eric Sherman would describe it, it's like a sin punishable by death. If you try to protect yourself, you might go away. You might cease to exist even.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing up that quote, by the way. It's so powerful about how that all worked. And how terrified she must have been, living in fear, trying to survive that marriage once his
self into a straitjacket so she could contain the emotions. And that's exactly the, if I understand anything at all about TMS, I know for myself that when I'm holding my body and my muscles and you know, rigidly, that's when TMS gets started.
Yeah. And it's like that's when we learn to learn to forget, if I can say it that way, when we learn to forget how to feel our own emotions, it's often when we're scared. It's when we don't feel like we have the freedom to feel our emotions. That's when we say, okay, we'll just stuff them. Like I can't express this to my husband because he's going to hit me again if I do, and I'm terrified, but I just need to smooth things over. I just need to survive.
So I'll just work harder and harder around the house, cleaning things up and making them perfect.
And I feel so out of control that, you know, this is the only thing that I can be in control of. I can't even exercise my vocational talents. I just have to clean up, and, yeah. Tough. It reminds me a little bit of the first season of Mad Men. I don't want to get too much on a sidetrack, but that exploration of, you know, the challenges of being a housewife and not having other creative outlets, a little bit.
Well, this sounds like Ibsen, actually.
Yeah,
the
I'm
doll,
sure we could take it.
The doll's house and Nora leaving the doll's house and the whole... at the end of the 19th century, the emergence of women as the beginnings, the first stirrings of the female liberation movement, when she slams the door on that house and says, I won't be your perfect doll anymore.
There you go. Is there anyone who wants to slip in a final thought? Perhaps a number of people, I thought, really resonated with when we were talking about how you can get the symptom imperative when you remove a symptom, how others can just jump right in when you're first reading Dr. Sarno's books. Is anyone else?
I think I can say something close to that. There,
please.
About nine years of my life, I was always an emotional person, but I had to learn through 9 years of my life to detach myself and not be so emotional in certain situations that I was going through. And after those 9 years passed, when the bedridden TMS had hit me and I had to lay down and I couldn't even get up, I couldn't think, you know, what is it? What's going on? And then, you know, I'd read Sarno's book about, you know, thinking psychological and all that. And actually, the very first thoughts that came to me that started releasing the pain, the grip that was in my body, came to me through a dream and was letting me know that I needed to start being or start, you know, becoming who I used to be before I started masking all my emotions, if that makes sense. And I found it through a dream. I can keep it in the middle. You know, don't get too emotional. Don't get, you know, don't cover up what you're blessed with, but at the same time, understand what you've got and let it propel you to victory in life. And it came to me through a dream, if that makes sense.
Sure does.
Because, see, for like I said, for 10 years, I had to learn to back away and not be so emotional. And at the same time, all those emotions buried on the inside of me was about to explode me. So, yeah, TMS.
Well, in your dreams, your defensive shell
yeah.
that you operate on consciously day by day is no longer there. It's no longer valid. It's not keeping the latent psychological content from interacting, mm-hmm. if we're going to get theoretical there.
It's
wiped clean.
It's like therapy, or therapy with a good therapist. It's a safe place to experience some of those emotions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, thank you. I thought this was a fascinating discussion. This is one of the more book-oriented book discussion groups that we've had, but I think perhaps that's just because it's such a deep and fascinating and rich story.
Powerful piece.
Very powerful. The imagery of those dreams. But thanks, everyone, for joining us.